Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed down up inside. Choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart. Although I was a bit concerned, I felt no need for panic. I picked up my telephone.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're here at your service, and we're going to talk about cars and 100 other things. Whatever happens to enter my empty mind, we'll talk about. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my friends at Quality Transmission. If you have an issue with the transmission, Bob or Steve at Quality Transmission is really who you need to call. They do repairs on automatic standard transmissions. They do all kinds of cars, trucks, 4x4s, motorhomes. And he's been in Tempe, I think, since the early settlers were there. He's on the McClintock, just north of University in Tempe, and no matter where you live, they're certainly worth the drive. Bob and Steve deserve your trust because they are good guys and have shown it year in and year out for decades. They're good guys. All righty, my guest is Bill Conium from 25th Street Auto, which is just north of Indian School on 25th Street. Bill, what the heck's going on?
Morning, Mark. I'm just here to help out like you do each week.
Good, good, good. Bill's shop, again, is at 25th Street and north of Indian School. He services the Biltmore, the Esplanade?
Esplanade,
the Camelback, the corridor, that those areas up there. And how many times have you won the Better Business Ethics Award? You were a finalist once. Did you win once?
In all honesty, we never have won it for our size business, but we've been nominated and then a finalist for it probably 4 or 5 years in a row.
Good deal, good deal. And then AAA Top Shop Award?
I think we got 5 or 6 years in a row on that one.
Good one. Good one. And, of course, you have a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty, which is kind of unusual in our industry. So that tells me that most of your people drive like 8,000 a mile, 8,000 a year.
That would work to my advantage then, wouldn't it? Yeah.
I'm just teasing.
No, I bet you were about average of which used to be when I started in this industry at 12,000 miles a year. I think people are more like 15,000, and that may be somewhat due to the size of the Phoenix metro area.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. Okay, I'm going to tell a story. This is story time. This is where we light the campfire, and we talk about funny stuff that's happened in the world of Mark. I have this friend of mine who recently got a job in a government agency, and he's got to be 60 years old, and he said, I got my first paid holiday the other day.
At 60.
He's never had a paid holiday before. But he's in the government. So, and we're all kind of astounded. But my wife reminded me that I've never had a paid holiday either. And most of us that own our own jobs, we don't get a paid holiday. But he works for the government, and he has a paid holiday. So he said the other night that he thought that the next thing that he would do would be put an Obama sticker on his rear bumper. And I thought the rest of the guys were going to beat the heck out of him.
Well, now he's a team player since he's a government employee.
Yeah. Oh, and one of the ladies that was at dinner said, do you find yourself surrounded in the government arena with flaming liberals? And he wouldn't answer. He wouldn't answer. And later I ask him, how come you didn't answer that? And he goes, there's no way I'm stepping through that door.
I don't blame him. A smart man.
Yeah, a smart man. So when it comes down to it, it's just another day. You know what I got to do last week? I got to go with the Hash Knife Group, which is the Pony Express group that brings the mail via Pony Express from Holbrook to Scottsdale. And it was delivered this morning.
How cool is that?
And, there's a couple things that uh, is it may or may not be cool. Number one, how would you like to drive from Holbrook to Phoenix at 6 miles an hour? That's 200 miles, by the way.
That doesn't compute for a drag racer. No.
No, no. There's a lot of time to get to know all the people in your truck. You have a great time with that. We got up to Holbrook on Monday, and there was lots of everybody dresses up in their very authentic. Is that the right word?
Authentic.
Authentic. Thank you. I'm having a tough
time. We're a team here, you and I.
Yeah. I'm having a tough time with the words today. In their Kit Carson looking stuff. Okay, they're wearing chaps. They're wearing boots. They're wearing fringe jackets. But it was cold enough for a scarf and sometimes a hat, or always a hat. So we went to the courthouse where everybody was sworn in by the federal government because we're going to be handling their mail.
Ah, yes.
And so we all had to not only be sworn in but sign our names that we wouldn't mess with the mail. Now, keep in mind the mail we're hauling is typically cards and letters to relatives down in the valley or kids up in Holbrook mailing kids in elementary schools in Phoenix. So it's not like we're hauling
Social Security stuff.
It's not like it's full of Social Security checks. So anyway, they swear us in. I think the Elks had dinner for us. And then Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock, first rider, he's at the hotel, he's at the post office. Gosh darn it, man, I had a tough time. And he's at the post office, so they hand him the pouch, and he goes. Now, what we do is we hopscotch the group. So you and I are in the same truck and trailer. But I'm riding first. So I'm at mile marker 1. And I ride to mile marker 2 where you're sitting there on your horse ready to go. I pass the bag to you and I put my horse in the trailer. And I pass you and I meet you at the next mile marker. You pass your bag on to the third rider. You put your horse in the trailer and we hopscotch ahead 10, 20 miles.
Yeah.
And then we do that again. So you're in teams.
That's a great thing. I pictured this being a long time in the saddle, and then you said truck, and I'm thinking, this don't add up.
I'm finally getting it. And this is the first year that we've actually had some sophistication where we actually timed them from handoff to handoff. And we had a couple of guys in the 2 minute per mile, which is, that's pretty strong horse.
Yeah.
We had a couple of guys in the 8, 9, and 10 minute miles. We had one 74-year-old gentleman that did an 8 mile, and that's all I want to do. I want to live to be 70 or 80, and I want to ride a horse a mile at a gentle trot, or maybe start out at a full run, drop down to a trot, canter, and then speed up for the handoff. That's just all I want to do. You can take me after that, Lord. I want to work a roundup. A good friend of mine, Wayne Smith's dad, worked a roundup when he was in his 80s. That's 10 hours in the saddle working cows. That you got to be a tough son of a gun to pull that off. You got to also drink Motrin like it's orange juice. And you take Motrin before you go riding. It doesn't do any good after. It's too late. But there's something about this acid in your muscles and all this other horse baloney. But anyway, so it was, we went Holbrook to Payson one day. And then in Payson, we had a big fiesta and fed us and stuff. And then from there, we went to Phoenix. Now, Phoenix, that was a much better deal because the weather was better. Up on top of the rim, it was all snowy. Mm-hmm. There was lots of ice. We couldn't really run the horses off the side of the road because there was a good blanket of snow. So we had to put them on the road. We had two police cars in front of the car, my truck. My truck contained the captain of the entire ride. And then the judge, and I was just a support for both of them. So between radios and cell phones and text messages, we kind of kept all in track. And I got to see every single handoff. Now, two policemen in front of us, and we took the right lane of the freeway, obviously. And then there was two policemen behind us. And as the pass, when we were going to pass the bag from rider number 1 to number 2, the police would pull out into the left lane to block traffic because if you're running two horses at one another side by side that may never have met
each other.
and it could be that one of them's a gelding and one of them's a mare. And it could be that she's in heat. And it could be a whole lot of things. So these two horses come together and there is the possibility of a crash. And there's also a possibility of one horse getting thrown into the fast lane. So that's why we blocked the traffic. Yeah. But that's only every mile. And people would go by us. They would see what was going on. And then they'd go by us again with all the cameras out. So they make a U-turn on the freeway come back around. And then we had a lot of people offside. It was so much fun. It was so 1880s. It was so 1880s.
Yeah.
Everything about it, the horses, the riders, just everything about it. And there was one guy named Wayne something or other who looked the part from his head to his toes. And I just, it was just really an experience, and I'm blessed to have to go with it. But the Hash Knife Group up in Holbrook puts that on every year, and they've done it for 55 years.
Wow.
And there has been many men that have been in there 30, 35 years. But obviously there comes a time where you can't ride a horse, you know, full throttle. So they become support group after that.
Yeah.
So it's really fun, really nice, and I'm glad to be invited. And hopefully next year I can even ride. Because my perception was is that we were going to run wide open for a mile, and I don't have a horse that'll do that. But you know what else?
Neither of you were ready for that.
Well, and neither does anybody on the ride had a horse that would run wide open for a mile. So now that I'm comforted about that, but if anybody wants to ride in the Hash Knife ride, then you know, get a hold of me, Mark at MarkSalem.com. I'll put you in touch with the people. It's a lot of fun. There, I think there's a fee associated with riding in the Hash Knife. You can be a guest, And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So if you ever thought that you wanted to do something like that, the only thing is women can't ride. Do you know why?
Because they're sexist.
No. The Historical Society evidently says that we have a 55-year record, and should we change any of the parameters, we have to start over.
It's a whole new contest.
It's a whole new contest.
Yeah.
So that comes up a lot, and there's a lot of us that wish we could do it differently. But I'm not in the decision-making process anyway. But there's a lot of them that wish they could, but they're scared to lose their 55 years of continuous Pony Express ride from Holbrook to Phoenix. 602-508-0960. You guys can talk about cars now. 602-508-0960.
Bill, 1 minute.
Last week, we talked about oil additives. We talked about what do I do when I smell gas. And I says, kick your wife out the car, but that didn't go over very well. We talked about it.
It might be safer than to light in the match and finding the leak.
We talked about, is our oil going to get dirtier on a dusty road than it's going to be in downtown Phoenix? That's an interesting question. We talked about 30,000-mile services, and we talked about, why do repair shops do this or do that? And storing vehicles. We talked about carburetors, fuel injections, black smoke. And we talked about what all the different color smokes. What do they mean?
Yeah.
Blue, white, black, cloudy, whatever. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Give us a call. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and my co-pilot today is Bill Conium. He is the owner and head cheese of 25th Street Auto, which is just on north of Indian School on 25th Street, with lots and lots of good historical work and trust and integrity. So if you live in the Biltmore area, if you live in the Camelback Corridor area or the Esplanade, they get it?
Well done.
That area, then Bill would be an option for you to take your car to. Let's go to the phones. We have open lines available, and if you'd like to join us, or if you have a car question, or if your husband has a car question and he doesn't want to ask it, then you wives can call 602-508-0960. 508-0960. Bob, good morning to you. How can we help you today?
Morning, guys. You know, with the new economy cars that are trying to achieve the highest mileage, and the engine shuts off when you take your foot off the gas for so many seconds, and then you touch the gas and the engine restarts again. Do you think that's going to lead to premature engine wear, because startup wear is the majority of wear on an engine?
Well, I would agree that startup wear is the majority of wear on the engine, but they have made changes. The tolerances inside new engines are better. The oiling systems are better, and the oils that they use. You know, you'll find if you own a newer Honda, an Insight or something like that, it's going to be 0W-something oil. And that means as soon as the starter starts to move that engine around, it's got lubrication. So it's kind of a trade-off. You're going to wear the engine less because it's not running, and you're going to wear the engine more because you started a lot. I don't think there's going to be a drastic problem there.
Yeah, and I think, too, I don't know, it certainly is oil pressure at the beginning, but let me add a word there to think, make it a cold start is where we get the most wear, not the warm start. And the cold start is that if the oil filter sees a tremendous difference of pressure in and out, the oil filter bypasses. There's your wear. We're going to circulate unfiltered oil for seconds on a cold morning. But on a hot morning, oil that goes in is 40 and oil that comes out is 40. So the filter doesn't bypass, and so we're not going to have the wear issues that you suggest we do because the motor's already warm. Now, the General Motors have had those electric Econo Tahoes where they have electric motors on four wheels. The first time they gave me one, I was driving it down the road, and I stopped, and when I looked down, the oil pressure was zero. I just about died. And I'm going, holy moly. So I'm getting out. I got my flashers on. I'm looking underneath it thinking, it's brand new. I just blew the plug out of it, or I just blew the motor up.
Yeah.
Motor dies. It just dies.
Intentionally.
Yeah, intentionally. But they didn't tell you that when the oil pressure drops down.
There's a learning curve.
There is a learning curve. But to answer your question, that's going to be, I don't think that's going to be a problem. I think that the electric motors have showed to be pretty dependable, but it's not like anybody's taken an insight to 300,000 miles yet.
No.
And so the jury's still out on these Econo cars. While in the short term, maybe the first 100,000 miles, I can see benefits, and I would certainly not talk anybody out of it. But I'm going to caution you that car better be paid for and worth nothing if you're going to run it to 300, because there's a risk there.
Have to agree.
There's a lot of money there. Bill or Bob, are you thinking about buying one?
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like there's a lot going on every time you pull up, to a stoplight and your engine shuts off and then restarts.
No, you're right about that. But let us share with you, we've been through this before, Bill and I, when we went from points and condensers to electronic ignitions. Were you scared?
We didn't have a clue.
We didn't have a clue. And when
we didn't know what we were going to expect. Yeah.
And we didn't know how to troubleshoot it. We didn't know what those parts did.
No.
We just, in 1974, 1976, boom, we went into electronic ignition. And then how about the carburetor where you set the dwell on the carburetor, the electronic mixture control solenoids?
Oh.
How, all of a sudden we have electronic components in the carburetor, and we're supposed to set an upper paddle, a lower paddle, which does the travel of the mixture control solenoid, and it has to be at 31 degrees dwell or something like that.
Yeah, and then like this call, people expect to come to us for car advice, yeah. And, well, the first day that variable Venturi carburetor came out, I didn't have any track record to share with them about what I think about the durability or the dependability.
And let me finish your statement. The variable Venturi, the VV carburetor, was the biggest POS that I have ever seen in my life.
Did make me some money over the years.
And I feel the same way about Ford diesels right now.
Oh, yeah.
They make me lots of money. But we're not going to know. But some of those cars can be explained at $300 a month is what any car is worth during the month. So at the end of a year, $300, that's $3,600 worth of use, okay, if you paid cash for it. Then you turn around and say, okay, well, then I can go 100,000 miles, 15,000 miles a year, 10,000 miles a year, or whatever you happen to use, certainly within 10 years. So the car is going to pay for itself after about 5 years. We're done with the car. The car doesn't owe us anything. And then after that is where you really start making money, because every month you drive it with no maintenance, it's the same as putting $300 in your pocket. But to answer your question on the inside and some of the others, we just don't know enough. We don't have enough history.
We don't have enough history.
Give me a good example of a car that everybody thought was the greatest car in the world, but 3, 4, 5 years later, it was terrible.
Oh, geez. You stumped me on that one.
How about the Escort?
Well, it was the world car. It was going to save the world.
Yes.
But it didn't take, I worked at a Ford dealer at the time, and it didn't take more than a matter of months before we realized it wasn't the greatest car in the world.
And it had the worst, its ability to resist any kind of an overheat without huge financial ramifications was unprecedented. We could take Ford V8s and Chevy V8s and run them till the exhaust manifolds melted flat, yep. and they would still continue to drive.
That Ford run there,
if once the needle touched the red, you were done. you were done.
Yeah, it was like caller the cylinder head was made out of wax paper or something. Yeah. It just wasn't very tolerant.
Exactly. And who was that caller?
That's Charlotte.
Charlotte, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Yes, hi. I have a 2000 Toyota Camry with 68,000 miles on it. And what my question is, when I check the oil, and I know how to do that, it doesn't look like there's oil on the stick, but there is. So
2 minutes.
Is it because the oil is really clean, or how can I be sure that there is oil?
Okay. It's going to be... It's really nice. This is a nice problem to have, I need to tell you. Because whoever's taking care of the car's maintenance, and hopefully it's you, you're doing a good job, because it's not too often that we run into this problem. How can she see the oil? How does she know for sure? And the only way I know is to reflect it off the light. Hopefully it's a sunny day. You can pull it out. You can raise it up and tilt the stick and let the sun shine off of it and see where it's at. Other than just adding something to the oil to darken it up.
Yeah, they do make dyes, but I'm thinking, I bet you can kind of get the knack of this. And of course, we want to make sure that there really is oil on the stick. You grab a hold of it, your finger gets wet. Okay, we know the engine's not empty.
Right.
But I do that exact same thing. I dry the dipstick off, and I try it again, and I stand in the really direct sunlight, and I look at both sides of it and twist it back and forth and rotate it around until I say, okay, I can see a shiny difference over here. Mm-hmm. And the more trouble I have, the happier I am with that engine. Well done.
Yeah, and that would be the answer. I would think that, how many miles you got in your car?
68.
Okay. I'm going to hold you over because I've got a break right now, but I'm going to hold you over, and I've got some other thoughts about it. Perhaps maybe set you to where you don't have to check it as often as maybe you are. So you just stay right there. 602-508-0960 to the rest of you got open lines. 602-508-0960. And if we can't help you with your car problem, then we'll just BS our way through it the best we can.
The Patriot.
All about that demon, automobile, the metal monster with the polygraph.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Phone number 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. Tom and Action Auto is a full-service shop that served the Deer Valley area since 1983. They're located at I-17 and Deer Valley Road. It's a family-owned business. Tom and Action Auto pride themselves on accurate repairs and reasonable prices. They use factory-recommended intervals for maintenance services they perform. And what they're saying in a nice way is they don't make them up like maybe others do. They don't make up those intervals. Their technicians are ASC certified. Some of them are master certified. And they get the job done right the first time. Tom is an A-plus rated Business Bureau customer. And he's also a TechNet service center. So if you're up in the Deer Valley area, I-17 in Deer Valley, east or west, makes no difference, give Action Auto a try. Okay, Charlotte, let me ask you a question. Bill and I were discussing the issue. How often do you change the oil on your Camry?
About 3,000.
2,000?
3.
3,000. Okay, and have you ever added any oil all the time you've owned it?
No.
Okay, and when you get out of your car, or when you get into your car, whether it's at work or at home in your driveway, if there was a puddle of oil underneath it, would you typically notice that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I was going to say, you're far more aware, more proactive than most of America. Thanks for changing your oil at 3,000 miles. It's what I recommend in the desert. Some people say you don't have to do it that often, but an oil change is about the cheapest way you can have a personal technician to keep an eye on things for you. So keep that up. If we have a track record that your car isn't consuming oil, you've driven 3,000 miles and it hasn't consumed even a quart of oil, I'm going to say that your car may be better than most Toyotas about oil consumption, but it also may be a good candidate that you don't have to mind the owner's manual that says every time you fill up the car with gas, you check all of your fluids. I think you've got enough history there to know that you it's not consuming a large amount of oil. So you may not have to be out there every Saturday morning checking the oil like I would recommend for some of my customers with an aging vehicle that's developing problems. So I think that we can put you on a different schedule. A lot of times I come up with, you know, do the buddy check 12 thing. You know, check under the hood monthly sometimes is adequate for some people.
And I agree. I think, Charlotte, if your comfort zone, certainly my comfort zone, if you were my mother or if you were my sister, the sister that I like anyway, I would say to you, skip the first 2,000 miles. And if you can go to 2,500, check it at 2,500. If it's bugging you know, a lot, then do it at 2,000, do it at 2,500, and then change the oil at 3,000.
I think the thing that's bugging me is I don't have an oil pressure gauge, but I have a oil icon.
Uh-huh.
Can I rely on that to come on if I'm in trouble?
Every single time you turn the key on,
yes,
and before the motor starts, get in the habit of looking at that icon. Because it will be there because it doesn't see oil pressure. You just turn to the key to the on position where the radio and the wipers work.
Mm-hmm.
That's called a bulb check. So you turn the key on, you look at the icon, it comes on, you hit the key, it starts up, the icon goes off, that you're fine. There is nothing wrong with your car at that point. Yes, and under those circumstances, you should be able to trust that icon for the rest of that trip, no matter whether you drove to New York City or not.
As oil level has a indicator on it, yep, it's just as good as checking the dipstick as far as, is my engine safe?
But I think the oil icon she's talking about, is it red by chance, Charlotte?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's going to be the oil pressure.
Oil pressure, right.
Yeah.
So what I mean is there's apparently enough pressure to cold start that engine and satisfy the oil pressure sensor.
Right.
So, yeah, you've got enough oil to finish that trip. But it doesn't take the place of periodically checking the oil. But
right.
I think you can take comfort in you can do it less often because you've got a solid engine in that car.
And you can trust it. You can trust the light. It is working. It's supposed to come on when the engine's dead, and it's supposed to go off when the engine starts. That should tell you I can trust it. Okay?
Now, the dipstick, does it actually go into a reservoir so the front and the back of it would indicate oil? Or is it, what does the dipstick go into?
It goes into the oil pan. We don't care what the configuration of the oil pan is. There's going to be a level. It's like the bottom of the ocean floor. It can change a lot, but there's going to be just a level. So the answer is that it goes right into the oil pan, and it touches and goes into the level. That's why we want you to check your oil when the engine's off.
It's kind of, it doesn't wipe across something and get half of the dipstick wet as it's checking level. It's like you put your finger in your coffee cup. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah. So 602-508-0960. We're open for car questions. We've got answers. And if not, like I said, we'll just cheat our way through it. Because Bill and I were good students in high school and in college. And truthfully, neither one of us has ever made a car mistake. So we have quite a track record. Unless, of course, you're calling to ask us to take the side of a wife and a husband. And 2,600,000 times we've taken the side of the wife. And I think it's been two. We've taken the side of the man. We'll be right back.
The Patriot.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Bill Conium from 25th Street Auto. He's 25th Street Auto, or after the 25th Street North of Indian School. And Bill is a multi-time Better Business Bureau Ethics Award finalist. He has won multiple times the AAA Top Shop Award. They have a good warranty, and Bill has been a member of the Phoenix and Arizona's best car repair shops, and he's done so with tremendous integrity. And frankly, him and I don't even talk once a year because I don't ever have any time to call him and say, I got a call from Mrs. Jones. So that's really nice. And as a matter of fact, almost all the shops are that way, but Bill is especially that way because whatever problems they have, he's taken care of long before they get to me. And the reason why that's important is because I've got $5,000 of my money out there that says that if you go to one of my shops, one of the shops on our website, marksalem.com, and you have a dispute, then we have a process you must go through, which includes a Better Business Bureau. But at the end of the day, if the shop is instructed to give you a refund, a cash refund, or to make a repair and the shop refuses, I will personally assume that responsibility up to $5,000. So I'll either write a a refund for up to $5,000, which covers almost all the transmission work, and or I'll do work up to $5,000. So you're covered. I'm putting my money where my mouth is, and the reason why is because the guys like Bill. Bill and 25th Street Auto are great, great places to go. And as you can imagine, there's a risk and reward here, and I'm not going to load our list up with a bunch of people that might expose me to those promises. And the good news is that level before me writing a check is called arbitration at the Better Business Bureau, and none of my shops in 20 years has ever even been there. Everything has been handled lower to everyone's satisfaction, so that's kind of nice. Hey, Jeremy, you got any callers? 602-508.
We have Tony up next.
All righty. 602-508-0960. And while we talk to Tony, you can get on the phone, 508-0960. And Tony, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hey, thank you, Mark and Bill. Hey, Mark, we're proud of you hearing that you went and participated with that Hash Knife Pony Express ride.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, that is heritage for this. You know, not only, that little slice, from, up north down here. But that's all we really had. We didn't have, planes, trains, and, anything like
that's right.
that before that. And it's evolved what we have now. I mean, got email now, but...
It's pretty special.
Right.
It's like riding a covered wagon to Chicago.
Right. Well, Wells Fargo was like the main thing, there for a while, and then they got passengers and everything else. But let me ask you this, okay? And then we'll get into the car questions. I really want to ask Bill something. When's the last time, Mark, that when you got up on a horse, when you put that foot in the stirrup, and you grabbed the handful of mane, you grabbed that saddle horn, and you got up on there and you mounted up, that horse had to rock back and forth and spread its feet just a little bit wider before it took off. Did you ever thought you were going to have a horse gallop full speed for 1 mile?
Yes, because in the original days of the Pony Express, they didn't just run a mile. They ran far longer than that. My concern was it's not that other people would have horses that could or could not go a full mile at full out. It's that none of my horses could do that.
And so, well, you would have to have. No, I'm just saying this because you're a big guy, okay?
Yeah,
you're not overweight or anything like that.
No.
You're just a big guy, okay? But you would have to have like a draw horse, like a Morgan or a Clydesdale or something like that.
I have a Belgium. He's one class below the Budweiser Clydesdales. I got a Belgium with 10.5-inch feet.
Mm-hmm.
I bought him for a friend of mine who weighs like 380, and he's 6'14.5" or something like that. And he works cows on this big Belgium. His name is Bernie. But if Bernie were to canter or trot down the freeway as a Pony Express guy, people would think that an earthquake was occurring.
Right. That, and you probably had to pay for the pavement to be replaced.
Yeah. But you're right. You're right. The guys, the really, really good guys, like that guy that did a two-minute mile, two minutes, 2 seconds, he was just at a really nice, steady run. And 2 minutes into that, well, 6 minutes is a 10-mile an hour. So at 2 minutes, you add, the guy's running 20, 25 miles an hour. And we've seen him come out of the hole after they get the bag at 30 and 35 and 40 miles an hour. But nobody could sustain that because obviously that's you're going to run your horse into the ground. And not to mention, Tony, that you have to do maybe 10 segments. So you have to run 10 miles over 200 miles. So you don't want to run your horse out the first time because they're going to laugh at you if you grab the bag and run the next mile. And that's where I would die.
Of course, back then, the old trails, they weren't paved or anything like that.
No, you're right.
Right.
And through the grace of God, nobody got hurt. Nobody got thrown off their horse. The only person that got thrown off his horse was Bill Bridwell. And he got thrown off the horse in Walmart there in Payson. And that was the only one that got hurt. Was Bill and he shouldn't have fed it 2 quarters because that first ride was good enough. So, Tony, thank you very much.
Next caller, Lee.
Question, Bill, if I may.
Say that again. Oh, go right ahead.
You're right there at 25th Street at the Indian School. You're right there at the base of the mountain, somewhat, or Camelback Mountain. you know, besides just all the car questions and four-wheel automobiles, we traverse the, you know, the streets of, you know, Phoenix. Do you get anything like dealing with boats and ATVs and quads and motorcycles and stuff like that? Because, I mean, look, we're right now here, we're almost at the end of our winter, and people are getting ready to gear up and get out there on the trail. You know, do you provide those services, sir?
Well, since my shop is so small, it makes it real difficult for me to, you know, because while the staff, we, you know, we have trailers, horse trailers, race car trailers, you know, the quads and RVs, that kind of thing. You know, we've got the experience to do it. The trick is my little shop has 6 parking spaces. So for somebody to drop off some, you know, a trailer full of quads or a boat or something like that, it just turns into a real problem. And while we would kind of enjoy the diversity, it's not really what we specialize in.
And Tony, you know, that's an interesting question, because the risk and the reward goes up dramatically when you start dealing with horse trailers and quads and stuff like that. Because if the quad breaks down and they're 17 miles deep into the superstitions or at the backside of Four Peaks, you're in big trouble. It's not like calling AAA. In addition to that, what is your prized customer? Is it Ma and Pa Kettle? Is it middle-aged professionals? You don't have a college around you, so like ASU probably isn't a big deal. Are the majority of your customers people who live in the area?
I thought that would be the case when we bought the building, but what it's turned into, you know, our favorite customer is the people that work in that part of town, Biltmore, Esplanade, the Camelback Quarter kind of thing. And the reason that is we're not in the business of selling people things. We're in the business of solutions. And the better I can, you know, I'm a servant leader. The better I can serve my public, the customers, then the happier I am. So if somebody can stop by my shop on the way to work, they spend maybe 30 seconds in my office. They say, you know, oh, hi, I'm expecting you. Sign here. We give them a ride to work. And then their car gets fixed. Instead of sitting in the parking lot, it gets fixed while they're at work. I pick them up at lunch. I pick them up afterwards. And they find that to be very convenient. And then they're not spending nights or weekends waiting around some car shop, even a cool car shop. Like, you need to see Mark's waiting room.
You bring up a good point, because the selling part just wads my underwear up something fierce. I saw a bill the other day. This is the way the story goes. The lady goes in for a noise, and they say that it's a timing belt slap, and the diagnostic charge on it, this is a Toyota, or I think it's a Toyota, the diagnostic charge is what? Give me a range.
Can be all over the place.
Okay, give me a range.
You know, it can be free. It can be over $100 if the diagnosis is I took your car apart.
No,
but I tell you what, if they took the car apart, they better be reducing the price of the repair correspondingly.
Okay, and I agree. $176 okay with you?
That I can't imagine me diagnosing a noise that would cost that.
Let me ask you a question.
Even if I had to get electronic equipment involved,
okay.
I can't imagine it being that.
Okay. Somebody comes in and they say, that, you know, check it over real good. Have you ever charged $200 to check over somebody's car?
No. Okay. Our biggest inspection that includes a whole lot of stuff, you know, tax and all, ain't near that much money.
Okay. I saw 3 bills the other day. I saw a bill from Shop A, a bill from Shop B, and then a bill that Shop C was asked to bid. Shop A says the car needs $1,690 worth of work with $176. Look and tell you that your timing belt is slapping your cover. Have you ever walked outside into a parking lot and diagnosed a car in the parking lot by the belt is slapping? Have you ever done that?
Don't believe I have.
I don't think I have either. And I asked my guys, has any of you done it? They said typically they don't even know the belt's slapping. They don't even hear the belt slapping until it gets really bad. Usually blows it off by then. The motor quits.
Yeah.
$1,600 on the front side. Second shop did the same job for half price. And the third shop came in between the two of them. $1,600. And they had the audacity to charge $176 in diagnostic fees.
On top of it.
On top of that.
You know, and I don't keep it a secret from any of my customers that I am a for-profit business.
Yeah.
But I'm never going to take advantage of anybody. I have no problem with someone being profitable and paying for good help and good benefits and good parts somewhere. Okay, maybe you charge a little more on diagnosis than a different shop, or maybe you charge less on the diagnosis, a little more on the repair. You know, as long as you're doing right and you can fall asleep well at night knowing that you're serving the public fairly, I have no problem with...
We have Lee, then Doug, then Tim.
I have a little trouble with you being the most... I don't know that anybody wants the most expensive shop or the least expensive shop.
All right, let me wad your underwear up one more time, and then we're going to say goodbye to Tony. One of the shops has got posted that their labor rate is 101, but the timing belt was 3.9 hours. And you divide their price into 3.9 hours, and the labor rate is 120.
Yep.
So they're billing at 120, but they're hiding it by saying they're 101 because the customer doesn't know the 3.9 we use. Yeah. 120. Okay? I feel the same way. All righty, real quick, we're going to talk with Lee. Lee, you're on your own, or you're not on your own. I'm here to help you. What can we do for you?
Well, Mark, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
The guy before me said something about you get a little bit older, a little bit larger. Well, just tell everybody that my doctor told me the only problem with me is that I'm an inch too short. So there
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
That's what I got to tell him.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah. You know what? My horse don't complain. He's still yeah. alive.
Yeah.
And my wife says I'm husky.
Yeah. His horse doesn't know he's a foot too short.
That's right. Yeah, there you go. Well, I don't really have a real problem. Well, you might think I do something before, but I've got a 2008 Expedition Limited.
Okay.
Very nice. We love it. My wife loves it. It's her vehicle. Why do they have a sealed transmission on those?
Okay. They don't. You got to go quick. Go.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's not a sealed transmission. It can't operate being sealed. I think they do have two things going. One is, if you don't know what the fluid looks like, you can't complain about your transmission under warranty. And another thing is, if they don't have a seal, a dipstick tube, and a dipstick, how much money have they saved on a million cars?
And not only that is that there is always a way to drain and refill that fluid. There is always a way. Now, sometimes you have to suck it out of a hole. Sometimes you have. But one way or another, there is a way. But this idea of a transmission that's sealed... The question I want you to answer to yourself, Lee, is who does that benefit?
That was, yeah.
Who does that benefit? And the fact of the matter is you call a shop and you say, hey, I got so many miles on my 08 Expedition and I want to change the transmission. Well, I don't care what anybody says. Tell me, can you remove what I've got and put in what new, and that's all I want. Can you do that? And the answer is going to be, on 95% of the shops, the answer is going to be yes. Bill, thank you very much. 25th Street Auto, north
proud
of Indian School. And when we come back, we're going
to
take more calls, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Doug and Tim, don't go anywhere. You're going to be my first and my second callers. And Bill, thank you for spending your Saturday with me. Remember, Bill's at 25th Street, north of Indian School, and he is a very honest and knowledgeable guy.
Do you snore?
Call up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and just like I promised, we're going straight to the phones. We got Doug, Tim, and Dan. We're going to do those guys and take our time with them. If you'd like to join us, we have open lines at 602-508-0960. 508-0960. 0960. So call now because we got open lines. Doug, you're first, and thank you for holding.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have a 02 Ford 150. And it's a diagnostic question.
Okay.
When I am around between 14 and 19 RPM, 100 RPMs, it'll spitter and sputter. But if I give it the gas, it'll go fine.
Okay.
What's your thinking?
any codes at all?
I finally got it to pull a code. It gave me a misfire code.
Okay. The misfire code typically will send you to a specific symptom, or to a cylinder is what I mean to say.
Right, yeah. It gave me a number two.
Okay.
Misfire.
This is what I want you to do. I want you to take the spark plug wire off of number two and the spark plug wire off of number three and swap them. But you have to swap them coil too. You have to swap both ends of them. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So you have to swap the spark plug in and the coil in.
Okay.
And then clear the code, disconnect the battery for 3 or 4 minutes and put it back together, and then go drive it and let's see now if it moves from 2 to 3, what's wrong with it?
Okay, we tested the coils. It's not the coils or the plugs.
Okay, you how'd you test the coil?
Well, my mechanic did.
Okay.
I didn't.
Okay.
He said he has equipment that does that.
Okay, all right.
I'm just he did some things, and I'm just checking your stuff.
All right. Well, first of all, there's you fixing it and me fixing this two different things. I'm going to hook a scanner up to it, and I'm going to watch what's going on. I'm going to see if I can determine which cylinder. I'm also going to check that runner that feeds air and fuel to that cylinder. I'm going to check it for vacuum leaks. I'm going to look for if it's on the back side of that motor, on that one F-150, I'm going to look at the PCV valve boot at the very back of the engine that no one can see and no one can find, but you can sure hear it going sucking all the time. I'm going to be looking for that kind of stuff. Then I'm going to enrich in the mixture. I'm going to load it up a little bit. We're lucky to have a chassis dyno. I'm going to load it up a little bit, get it to start popping and missing at the 14 to 19 range. I'm going to add a little fuel and see what that does. Then I'm probably going to swap the spark plug, clear the codes, and go drive it and see if the code will move to the next cylinder. I've got a bad wire. If that doesn't work, then I probably will swap the coils. And then if that doesn't work, it's a spark plug. And see, unless you can look at the coil, at the spark plug, and the wire at exactly the miss, testing is useless. You have to test it when the problem exists. We can test a coil all day long at idle. We can test a coil all day long with the key on and the engine off, and it can pass and be perfectly bad. The same with the wire, the same with the spark plug. You have to test it in the environment it lives, so you can't take it out to test it, and you have to test it when the problem exists. That's the hardest part of our repair process. This isn't a hard thing.
You're not thinking that it's a fuel.
No. Let me ask you a question.
Went to the injectors.
Okay. If the fuel pump was substandard in pressure, volume, in pressure or volume, how is it that the mist goes away when you throttle it up?
I don't know about the pumps and the filters now with them in the tank. If you're giving it that extra force, that it's changing the pressure of the pump.
No, forget the pressure of the pump. Let's just think about it this way. The fuel supply is sufficient to get you to 1,400 RPM. Between 1,400 and 1,900 RPM, the fuel supply is insufficient to feed the motor as much fuel as it wants. As a result of that, you've got a misfire. But when you throttle it to the floor, you're asking it for even more fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so if it were a fuel starvation problem, as the deeper you went into the throttle, the worse the problem would be because the supply and pressure is substandard. That's why I hear a lot in my life about I had a dying and stalling problem and they replaced the fuel pump. Well, I mean, tell me what the symptoms were. Well, it didn't intermittently die at idle. Well, if we had a substandard fuel supply problem and it didn't have enough to idle the car, then why would it even start again? So I'm a little concerned about that. In your case, no. I would bet $10 that you don't have a fuel supply problem, that engine missed. And if you did, you'd have misfire codes on all the cylinders anyway. Because think about that. If we're doing a misfire code, And all of a sudden the engine starts running really, really lean, wouldn't we have 5, 6, 7, or 8 of those cylinders showing a misfire?
Right, if it's the fuel pump itself.
Now,
he was telling me I had a bad injector.
Okay.
And his recommendation was, since we've got the rail apart, why not just change them all out rather than...
How much did you pay for your diagnosis?
I don't have the ticket in front of me. I had some other work done, but I think like 300, about 350 in labor to do the injectors.
Okay. If you're going to, this could be a really good friend of yours. This could be your brother-in-law. I don't know the situation, but you still need to look him in the eye and say to him, what happens if we do $350 worth of work and we still have the problem? Okay. What are we going to do?
I do still have the problem. That's why I'm kind of wondering if he just went off the code or if he was...
No. You know what I...
Because at first we thought about the coils. I've had coils go bad in the past.
It can be any one of the four. It can be the coil, the plug wire, or the injector. If I would have thought that it was an injector problem, what the injector applies gasoline to that cylinder. That means the injector is substandard. Well, if I put propane into the air intake system and you and I go for a drive and I say, okay, Doug, make it happen, and you throttle up past 1,400, and I open up my propane tank that has an 8-foot piece of hose on it that's stuck into the air intake, and I start feeding that motor a little extra fuel, but not through the injector, and all of a sudden she smooths right out. Then I shut the can off, and all of a sudden the problem comes back. Then you say, yeah, this is a one injector problem. But if nothing happens when I add propane to the engine during this time, it isn't going to be the injector.
Okay.
And besides, you need to look at the spark plug. Because if the spark plug was running lean, the spark plugs on either side of a number two cylinder will show a nice tan, light brown color. The one that's running lean, because the injector's bad, is going to be white on white. So if he's already done the injector, did he give you the old one back by chance?
Oh, yeah. I have all the parts.
Okay. You need to go back to him and just say, you know what? I'm not mad at you, but it didn't work. I have the same problem. The only difference is now is I'm $350 less in the wallet, and I still have the problem.
That's the labor. The injectors are 150 p.
Yeah, I know. You have to say to him, we have a problem. Let's get the truck fixed first, okay. And then you and I will sit down like the friends that we are, and we'll work out, you know, what I really need to pay. But clearly that was a guess. It wasn't a correct diagnosis because I still got the problem. One other thing, okay. I want you to drive it when this happens at 1,400 to 1,900 RPM. I want you to take your left foot and gently apply the brake pedal. Gently apply the brake pedal.
I've tried doing that, and it...
didn't affect it.
Not so much. It, you know, when you do put pressure on it, like going up the hill to Payson, it gets worse, and there's just no power in it. There's no power in this engine anyway, but less power than normal.
Well, it's a Ford. It's a Ford.
Right. It runs good on flat ground.
Okay. We're going to stop teasing them now.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's done me good. I've maintained it well. It's just this problem, and I'm, according to what he told me, he tested the coils and the plugs and everything worked right.
Okay.
And,
okay, but Doug,
went to the injector.
The bottom line is once we fix the truck, we'll know what he may have fibbed about and what he didn't.
Okay.
We got to get it fixed first, and then once we get it fixed, all those questions will be answered. And
right.
And if he's a really good guy, he probably is. He's going to say, "I just flat made a mess of this, and I'm only going to charge you for the repair, and I'm going to apply all your other money to the repair, and I'll give you the refund." Hopefully, that's how he'll work. Thank you, Doug, very much.
Mark.
All righty, and Tim, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you today?
Well, clearly, you guys are a blessing 99.9% of the time. But, boy, there's that one-tenth of 1% where it's really, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm listening to this crazy stuff because you guys scare us.
I know.
At any rate, I'm just teasing you. I've got a question, two questions. One about oil weight. I have a Tundra, 2006 Tundra V6, and the manual calls for 530. I have an old friend who's a Toyota mechanic who says, don't run 530. It's not going to give you enough protection. Run 1030.
Okay.
We were talking about this 030 oil weight just a little bit earlier in the program. On that first question, how do you view that?
Okay. Put your hands together as if you're begging for forgiveness from your wife or praying. Rub your hands together and push them as hard as you can together and
Two
rub
minutes.
Them real fast.
They get hot.
Okay, now, good. The oil's job is to do three things. Carry the trash away, carry the heat away, and provide lubrication. So I challenge you on this. And let me tell you my credentials. I am the Western District Trainer for Valvoline. I've been trained at their laboratories. I know a little bit more about oil than the average bear. So I'm going to ask you, would you rather that I put peanut butter between your hands, or would you want me to flush it with water to do those three things? Provide lubrication, carry the heat, carry the trash. Will peanut butter carry the heat away better than water?
Okay, so we're talking 5:30, aren't we?
I don't care. You know, I'll tell you a quick story. We had a go-kart race one time, and Vaveline said to me, we're going to enter a go-kart for you and your staff, but you cannot win the race. I said, okay, we won't. So I said, send me some fancy oil. So they sent me some oil for this go-kart. I put 30 weight in everybody else's go-kart, but I put this magic oil in mine. Through a couple of accidents, we ended up winning, and I had to disqualify my team because of this. The maximum RPM was 3,500 RPM on these little gasoline lawnmower engines. Whatever I had in my engine was 5,600 RPM. And when I called them and I said, what the heck did you give me? They said, we gave you a zero weight. A zero weight. The thinner is better. There's no question about it. It's cut and dried. Thinner is better. It's faster start. It's better fuel economy. It's better wear rejection. It's better heat rejection. Everything is better with 0.10, 0.5, 0.20. And trust me when I tell you, we're not too long. And stay here because I guess we're going to talk to you some more. And Dan, you'll be next too. Trust me when I tell you, we're going to have zero pretty quick.
If you're wondering what kind of country...
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We're starving for time here, so I'm going to talk as quickly as I can. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. If you have an issue with a transmission or you think it's a transmission, Bob and Steve at Quality Transmission will drive your car for free and talk to you for free. They won't put it on the rack and start taking it apart for free, but they're going to talk with you and drive your car for free. They'll tell you if it's a transmission problem or an engine problem, and that's the best value out there. Bob and Steve at Quality Transmission are great people. Automatic, standard transmissions, years of experience, works on trucks, RVs, motorhomes, 4x4s. They're in Tempe on McClintock North of University, and no matter where you live, they're worth the drive. Number two, real quick. I said earlier in the show that I got to ride on the Pony Express. I was participating in the Pony Express ride where we brought the mail from Holbrook to Scottsdale. It took 3 days, and every mile a horse carried it. I said to you that Billy Bridwell had fallen off the horse at Walmart, and he was the only one that was hurt. So I'm going to give you his response to that, and it's clean. It's clean. Hold on. I think I'm going to give you, so I'll do it later. All righty. Hey, Tim, we're talking about, and now I need to stop and hang up. Okay, Tim, we were talking about oil.
Your analogy about the peanut butter has sufficiently answered that question. In fact, I'm thinking about a peanut butter sandwich right now. But
oh, yeah, with little bananas. You had a second question, though, and I haven't forgotten that.
The second question was you were talking about sealed transmissions.
Okay.
This Tundra has one of those. I've looked up the maintenance schedule on it, and they're talking, I don't know, 100,000 miles or something before you need to have a transmission service. That seems a little out of line to me. What's your take on that?
Well, the people that have 100,000 mile spark plugs, 100,000 mile coolant, 100,000 mile transmission fluids, I tell them that I don't believe that you are best served when the owner's manual from California to New York, from Wisconsin, North Dakota, down to Florida and Arizona is used in all the same cars. I think there are geographical and environmental differences, and I tell people, most of the people, that if you want my opinion, I would certainly be looking at those products from 70,000 on up. I would typically do that work at the beginning of the summer. So if it's 70, you're on the tail end of the winter, then at 80, you're on the beginning of the summer, then I do it at 80. Do it at the beginning of the summer, so you go through the summer with fresh transmission fluid, fresh coolant, fresh spark plugs. But I do not agree that everybody can go 100,000 miles, and that's what's in their best interest. And so I do deviate from the owner's manual on those particular ideas.
Great.
All righty.
Well, let me just say, you guys are a blessing, and thanks for your service. It's greatly appreciated by all of us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. Dan, you have my full attention, buddy. How can I help you?
Okay, I'm not sure how much time we've got, so I'm going to get the first two questions in.
Go.
The first one's really easy. CarMD. You've heard it advertised, saves thousands of dollars. Is that worth anything at all? Or
okay, know, I can. All right, you go into the hospital, or you draw your own blood and you take it to a laboratory, and they tell you the ammonia is too high. What are you going to do next?
Well, they claim that they can show you how much it's going to cost or an auto cost and what kind of repair bill. I mean,
yeah,
in other words, I can pull codes over at AutoZone. I mean, if it's just pulling the codes, it's not an issue.
Okay, let's talk about the codes. There's a process in car repair. It's symptoms, diagnosis, and then estimates, and then repair and verification. Those all have to be there. Okay, let's start at the symptoms. You have the symptoms. Number two, you're going to go ahead and pull the codes, and that's not a diagnosis. I had a guy the other day say, the little three-whiskered kid at AutoZone said I needed all my O2 sensors. It was a fuel filter. The O2 sensors are screaming, give me more fuel, all of them, and this kid condemned all of them because he gets to sell parts, and he can sell $300 worth of O2 sensors. In reality, the guy had a plugged fuel filter, and the car was running lean. So the O2 sensors were the messengers. Are they going to be able to tell you that? Who's going to tell you that? You have a code that says all the O2 sensors are screaming lean. Who's going to tell you that you have a fuel filter that's plugged up unless the technician is there looking over your shoulder and saying, let's do this. So I'm going to look at the fuel trim numbers. If you see a fuel trim number and it says -6, what does that mean to you?
Not much.
Okay. If you see a mass airflow sensor and at idle, it's 62 grams. What does that mean to you?
Not too much.
You see what I'm saying? The fact of the matter is that a -5 on fuel trim means I'm running a tad lean. I'd like to be at zero. If I was +5, I'd be running a little bit fat. And a 62 on a mass airflow sensor at idle means that mass airflow sensor is lying its butt off because 62 is really 100 miles an hour. So it's overfueling the engine like crazy, so the oxygen sensors are completely screaming, shut the fuel off. And the AutoZone guy goes, oh, yeah, you got a bad fuel pump. It's not the bad fuel pump. It's the mass airflow sensor lying about how much air is coming into the motor. So, yeah, you can, it really and truly, if it was that easy, would I be paying my guys, you know, would we be charging $104 an hour if it was that easy? You know, it's not that easy. It's a gimmick. It gives you a false sense of satisfaction. And here's the deal. As people buy the parts based on the guesses that someone made over the internet, they always justify it and they say, well, I probably needed them anyway. And if you want to do that, that's fine. I can't tell you how many times a month, at least twice a month, someone will bring their car into the shop and they have already spent 3 times my diagnosis fee. 3 times guessing. And if they'll admit it. But they don't have to admit it because I'm smart enough to look underneath the hood and see how many parts are brand new. I already know how much you spent. So CarMD is not on my Thanksgiving list.
Okay. Well, the other question here, we just got a 2010 Ford Escape.
Okay.
Beautiful car, 17,000 miles. Got a really, really lovely thing. It's got a little bit a couple more months worth of a warranty on it still.
Yep.
So we didn't really take it to a car place to check out the car because we figured it's already got the warranty on it. Was that problem or a mistake? Or
No. Here's what you do. Number one, you take it in for an oil change before the warranty's out to an independent shop and say to them, would you look this over really good and give me a list of any concerns you have? Then you put that list in your pocket and you take it into the service department of your local dealership and you say to them, I'm almost at the end of my warranty. Would you please address any concerns? Now you're going to have two lists here pretty quick. You're going to have the first guy's list and the second guy's list. It's a little thin out there in car repair right now. So I'm going to say that the first guy's going to go a little overboard. Oh, you got a little bit of an oil leak right here. It's not an oil leak, it's an oil wetness, and that doesn't apply to an oil leak, and so I'm not going to do that. However, you also have on the other end of the spectrum the dealerships. It's not like people are beating down their doors to have their cars fixed either. So everybody's going to be looking a little more than normal, which will benefit you, and the people that make the decisions are the dealerships. So I think you are best served by having somebody change your oil and giving you a list and then taking it to the dealer and having all those things addressed and merging the two lists, and I think you'll be fine.
Okay. One last thing. You got a second?
Sure.
On this? Okay, good. I've got a car that's got this like mysterious, it looks like an oil leak, but it's like really, really just minor, well not minor, tiny amount of oil. The car's got, this is the car we used to use, it's 180,000 miles, I just use it for commuting right now. I mean, you know, to find out what the problem is, I mean, I'm worried about spending a ton of money on this car being so old, and I'm just wondering, is there anything I can do, or do I have to take it to them and no. have them diagnose it?
No, on your oil change. Take it in. Don't take it to a Quick Loops facility. Take right. it into a regular shop and say, would you put some dye in this?
Oh.
And then you say, when do you want me back? And he's going to say, I want you back in about 400 miles. And you say, fine. And they're going to put it up on the rack, and they're going to put on these funky-looking glasses, and they're going to say, and I got to take a break, and I'll tell you the rest of the story just right after this. All righty. I got it right down here, 10. Okay, I was telling you a story, and this is for Dan. Oil leak. You're going to go into the repair shop, and you're going to say, I got a little bit of an oil leak, unless you can tell me right now what it is. Maybe it's the filter gasket. Maybe it's the valve covers. Can you tell now? And if you can't, would you put some dye in? Then when do you want me to come back? Because we need to mix the dye with the oil. Then we're going to put your car up on the rack, and they may say a couple of days. They may say a week. They may say 100 miles, 400 miles, whatever they say. You come back. They're going to put it up. They're going to put these funky glasses on. They're going to have a black light, and they're going to start looking around, and you can literally follow the fluorescent oil directly to the point of the leak. And that whole thing is probably going to cost you about $25, give or take 10. Now, if you're a really good customer of theirs, oftentimes they'll no charge that whole thing, the oil leak analysis. If you're a one-time customer, it may cost you $25. That's the cheap way. That's the best way to find out where that oil's coming from, because once you put on those glasses and you shine that light on there, there's no question where the oil's coming from. So hopefully that helps you out. Dave, you're up next. Dave, how can I help you? Hey, Dave. Dave, I know you're there, and I know you've waited a while, but I'm going to wait for you.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing? Good morning.
Good, good, good. Go right ahead.
Yes, I got a question here. It's like a two-part. I got a 77 Chevelle, and it has a Jasper engine in it. I'd like to know your thoughts on those engines. Right now, it has about 16,000 miles on it, and my question is pretty much has to do with fuel economy.
Okay.
I had the carburetor rebuilt, and they rebuilt the two barrel on there, and I got it back, and I was getting about 15 miles a gallon, which is about, I think it, that car has a 19-gallon tank on it, and I was probably getting about 265, 270 miles out of it. And I had to take it back because it, on a warm run, you would shut it off for about 15 minutes to a half hour, and then it would be hard to start, and it smelled like it was flooding.
Okay.
So they did some adjustments to it, and I redid my analysis, and now I only got 241 miles out of the tank, or about 12.5 miles per gallon. So I keep everything changed, the cap rotor, plugs, all the PVC breathers and all that.
Okay.
Now, if I don't want to start messing with an air fuel mixture because I don't know too much about that. And right now it's passing emissions, and I don't want to take a chance on it failing. So I'm kind of seems like I'm at a standstill with it.
Okay. First of all, Jasper engine is a premium engine, and I sell the heck out of them. So, and yes, have I had problems with Jasper? Yes. Have I had to replace a motor under warranty? Yes. Was the customer happy? Yes. All that stuff is yes. Together, Jasper and I, we make a good team, and everybody makes mistakes. Some of the mistakes I make on the reinstallation, some of the mistakes they make on the reassembly. Together, we work to make the customer happy. Number two, your fuel economy issue. It could be a whole lot of things. It may not even be carburetor related. The question is what's the curb idle? What's the curb timing? What's the idle timing without mechanical or vacuum advance? Then we have to test the mechanical advance, and then we have to test the vacuum advance. We have to make sure that that motor's getting all the advance it's supposed to get, because if it doesn't, your fuel economy will be between 10 and 15. So this may not even be a carburetor problem. If you want to mess around with it, do this. Get your timing light out, pull the vacuum line off the distributor, add
idle, 2 minutes,
and take a mark. It'll be 8 degrees, 10 degrees. top dead center, before top dead center. Then I want you to plug the vacuum, or then leave the vacuum line disconnected, and I want you to bring the RPMs up so we can see the mechanical. And as you bring up the RPMs, that should advance that timing mark, maybe 10, 15 degrees. Then you're holding it up about 2,000 RPM, you're watching your timing light, and your brother, your wife, or your neighbor comes around and plugs the line back into the vacuum, and that should take you even further. The total amount of advance might be 20 to 25 degrees total. So we take 8 or 10 out of the bottom side, that means 18. So some of it's going to be mechanical, some of it's going to be vacuum. That's what you have to do. Then you also, even though it passed emissions, doesn't mean that it's getting everything it needs on the cruise, because your carburetor has idle, it has cruise, and it has wide open throttle. So the question is are all three of those circuits working? Because they're only going to test it at the emission station at idle and cruise. So there's still a lot more that can be done. What you're asking for is a performance adjustment. You want a gray-haired guy with some gray hairs and somebody who's been around those old cars. You want to make sure that they understand, and that performance tune-up is going to dial in. We have the ability to look at your spark plugs and see what kind of kilovolts go to each spark plug and the burn time of each one. So if your one spark plug has a burn time of 0.9 and the rest of them are 2.1, yeah, there's a problem. So the question is it the spark plug or is it a lean condition? Those are the, and you're going to spend between $125 and $200 for a performance tune-up. Typically no parts. It's a whole lot of adjustment, and it's putting that old engine on the edge of a razor blade with new technology, with technology that we didn't have in the 70s. And there's a lot of guys that can do that. If you want to, you can email me at mark@marksalem.com, and I will guide you. mark@marksalem.com. It's Tony and Steve. Stay there. We'll be right back.
The president has nominated former Senator Chuck Hagel to be the next Secretary of Defense.
I think
he knew it would be distracting, and he knew it would be
No, we just have Steve and Tony and then Steve.
Obama should choose someone else to lead the
And my hand will be on the slider whenever you need it.
The president's stance on defense.
America must engage in the world, not retreat from the world, but engage from the world.
Now, more than ever, will Hagel make America weaker around the globe? Intelligent Talk 960. The Patriot.
Hello, I'm Bob Jones, owner.
What you
of
doing for tomorrow? Any party? Do you have any interest in the game?
My
wife and I, I think the my son and his wife and my oldest daughter are going to a Super Bowl party, so Ray and I are going to go over to his house and watch the three kids. I won't watch the game, neither will the kids. We'll be playing, and my wife is a football fan, so she'll be watching, but I'm going because of the kids.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, I mean, I'm excited for the Super Bowl, the Harbaugh brothers, the Harbaugh Bowl,
no other transmission all that kind shop of stuff, but I could care less who wins.
That's how I feel. Usually I have like a dog or somebody that I want in the fight, but for some reason, I'm really not interested in who wins this game. I just want to see it.
Yeah. But no, I got a water leak underneath the sink. I got a fix, and I've got a cow that I got a doctor,
means that you can trust us.
I've got a fence that I've got to fix, and some other little things like that. Other than that, that's fine.
Getting some good stuff done.
Did you know Raintree Auto Repair is ranked number one in the entire United States by Mercedes-Benz for their repairs? Andy Val, the dad, and his sons Tom and Paul operate Raintree Auto Body in North Scottsdale. They've been around since 1972. Sure, they fix Kias and Hondas and Chevys and Fords, but they are rated the best for their ability to correctly repair the Mercedes-Benz. Remember, Raintree Auto Repair is ranked number one in the entire United States by Mercedes-Benz for their repairs. They have a machine called the Select Bench. It's the same jig they assemble your car on. Raintree can put your car back to its pre-loss condition with 100% accuracy. Raintree Auto Repair is a BBB member with a plus rating, and they're also recommended by Garagefly. Raintree Auto Repair provides free estimates, and they'll give you a lifetime warranty on all paint and bodywork. They use the best Glacerit paint, and it's waterborne paint, so it has no environmental effect. For more information, stop by RaintreeAutoBodyInc.com.
It takes two of us to deliver a very...
Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. It's 44 minutes after the 11 o'clock, and we're going to close up here in at 12 o'clock noon every Saturday, 10 to 12. We're right here. But I want to tell you about Brian and Thelma, who own Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're in Mesa. They've been providing good quality car care since 1970 in the Mesa area. All major foreign, domestic, motorhomes, trucks, Thompson's understands that your vehicle is a major investment, and they will care for each customer's vehicle as if it was their own. You just won't find better people than Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street, just east of Stapley on Main Street in Mesa. And let's go to the Tony. You're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, thank you, Mark. I want to refer back to the low viscosity oil. You know, you talked about the zero, stuff like that. Okay. You know, NASCAR qualifies with that. And most cars today, as you've said, you know, you have the 520, the 530, understandably so, because of the tolerances. But let's talk about coasting. Now, I don't want to bring up the air horn, because I know you're going to do it when you get a chance. Okay, because that's going to tell everybody.
Just get to the question, Tony. Just get to the question. You know, let's move on. Coasting.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
If you're coasting in NASCAR right now, not only are you saving fuel, you're saving oil, correct?
Coasting, NASCAR has nothing to do with coasting. I was the NASCAR consumer crew chief for 3 years. I was the NASCAR consumer crew chief for 3 years. There's no coasting at NASCAR. But I'll assume that you're talking about coasting with normal people, and I'll go along that line.
Now, when you're coasting, the best thing to do, especially in today's car, if you have a stick versus an automatic transmission, the best thing you can do with low viscosity oil is kick it out of gear and coast, correct?
No. There's no science that says that an automatic in neutral is going to give you any better or worse fuel economy performance or long life, and there is no science that says that shifting it into neutral, whether you kick it into neutral or you clutch it, there is a transfer of wear when you're shifting it unnecessarily. You've got bushings in the shift linkage. You've got clutch activity. You got master cylinder. You got slave cylinder. You got clutch pressure plate disc. And there's no science that says that one is better than the other. That's
kicking
what the scientists.
Stick out of drive, kicking the stick out of gear into neutral means you're going to use less oil, especially when you have 0% viscosity.
You're going to use less oil.
Yes, when you go into neutral, especially when you're downshifting, that's what's really sucking the motor oil out of the engines today. If you run a stick.
Okay, all right. Well, I don't agree with you, but that's okay because agreement is okay. But why what causes you to suck the oil out of the engine when you're downshifting? What mechanical mechanism or what activity occurs that causes you to suck the oil out of an engine?
Fitting pistons and just prescribed pistons.
Prescribed pistons.
Right. So there's less friction.
Come on, Tony.
Loose pistons, a prescribed piston ring. I mean, look, that's what dragsters do, don't they not? They run them for one run. So there's the less friction, right?
Okay. Okay, well, we're gonna move on, Tony, because we've gone from NASCAR to dragster, and we're talking about shifting an automatic transmission into neutral as you're coming to a stop or shifting a mechanical. We're all over the board, and I've got other callers. So, Tony, thank you for calling. We just have to agree to disagree, and let's go to Steve. Steve, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, yeah, good morning, Mark. I have a 97 Ford F-250, 7.3 power stroke.
Okay.
Several times. And lately, especially in the cooler morning, I'm experiencing an intermittent issue right at startup as I'm pulling away from the house, probably for the first 5 miles, is my throttle seems real touchy. It's almost like the old school when you're running with your buddy at the slot car track and your controller runs one way and he's got this real touchy one. And that seems like how my throttle is it's real, real touchy until I get warmed up. It doesn't happen when the truck's warmed up and has been running.
Okay. Now, when you say touchy, let me ask you a question. Is it literally a different feel to your foot?
It's not really a different feel to the foot. It almost feels like the range normally, if I can explain it, like 1 through 10 is normal. And now the touchiness through the throttle going from low to accelerating is 1 through 5. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. One of the things that I think your 7.3 has on it is a throttle position sensor, TPS, and it's attached to the throttle blades or the pivot point of the throttle blades. There are three wires to it. There's a ground, and then there's 5 volts, and then there's a return wire. So the throttle position sensor tells the computer, it let's pretend it has a 1 through 5. 1 is idle and 5 is wide open throttle and everything in between. You could literally test that with a couple of straight pins and a digital volt ohmmeter, but the easier way to do it and the better way to do it is just plug a scanner in and look at it to see if the throttle position sensor is responding appropriately. I can't imagine a shop would charge you very much money if you went in and just said, I want you just to check the throttle position sensor sweep, and I want you to check it once right now, and then I'll be back in a couple hours, and you just plug your scanner in and check it again and see if there's any difference in the sweep of the throttle position sensor. If you were my customer and I looked inside and you had 8 work orders in 2012 or something like that, I'd do that for you for nothing. So the idea is that, is there a difference? Is the sweep go up in 1/100th of a volt or 1/10th of a volt, or is it jumping like crazy? Does it go from 0.8 to 1.6 without stopping in the middle? Because your truck, you know, after all, is 3, 6, it's 16 years old. It probably has lots of miles on it. And that throttle position sensor is working every minute that your foot's on the throttle. The other thing I would want you to check is take the throttle cable off of the linkage, the air linkage, the throttle blade linkage on your diesel, and just activate that lever with your hand and make sure that it smoothly opens and closes and that it's not sticky, and that's something you need to do first thing in the morning. If it's dirty or if it feels bad, then you're just going to get some carb cleaner and you're going to stuff a rag behind the throttle blades so that you don't get a bunch of carb cleaner inside the engine, and you're going to just spray it all out, clean it all up, and that's called cleaning the throttle blades, top, bottom, left, and right, all the bore holes, all the back side of the flaps, the front side of the flaps. Then try it the next morning and see what happens. But I'm thinking you're gummed up somewhere, and the only two places that I can think of would be the throttle position sensor or the throttle blades. I don't think your throttle pedal has anything. That's why I ask you about that first. So that's
I don't feel any tension where it feels harder or softer or anything like that. But you said a word earlier that really keys in on it that I didn't use. It almost makes the truck feel jumpy.
Okay. And that's why I think instead of the piano keys going, because there's a piano key kind of activation inside there. There's a little arm that goes up and down some piano keys. It's hopping. The needle isn't touching all the piano keys. So it touches 1, and then it touches 11, and then it jumps to 110. That's what I'm thinking. And I would be able to see that. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Mark.
You betcha. Thank you. Larry Harker's Auto Repairs at 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's a good guy. Bob and Ellen Frisbee, many of the shops on MarkSalem.com, many of the best repair shops in Phoenix, 20-year list, the best shops in Phoenix appear at MarkSalem.com. But Bob and Ellen Frisbee have owned Larry Harker's Auto since 1989, and their technicians have been with them for decades. They're a trusted source for quality repairs, affordable prices, and they kind of hold down the area between Camelback south to the 10, between the West 101 and the I-17. Big area. But you can count on Bob and Ellen. Like many other shops in our list, it's a husband and wife team, and for whatever reason, and I know the reason, from whatever reason, the husband-wife pair working at an auto repair shop gives it balance. The ladies bring balance. So it's a good thing. It's a really, really good thing. So if you're in that area, Larry Harker's Auto is the place that you should be. Let me see what else I've got to do real quick here. I had talked about Bill Bridwell, and I told you that he fell off the horse at Walmart, and he called me, and he said, no, that wasn't a horse. It was a bar stool. Now, I'm going to tell you that when the Hash Knife guys ride from Holbrook to Phoenix, Holbrook to Scottsdale, it takes about 2.5-3 days. I'm telling you right now, there is no liquor. We're not going to ride horses down the 87 and down the 260 with all liquored up. So that's we're teasing you. I don't know why I have to tell you that, but we're teasing you. But Billy said, get your story straight. I fell off a bar stool. But we're just teasing you. I was teasing you about him falling off the horse at Walmart, and he's teasing me that it was a bar stool, okay? I also want to talk to you about something that's important, and this is car repair at its best. Here's the deal. When you go into a car repair shop, you must give them the symptoms that you want them to fix. What you don't want the car repair shop to do is to go on a shopping spree. Nothing is going to make you madder than to go in with an oil leak and have them tell you that you need rear brakes. Because the obvious question is, what were you doing looking at my rear brakes when you should have been looking at an oil leak? Now, the only acceptable answer is when I pulled your car into the bay, the brakes are clearly metal to metal, and so I looked at them for you. And they're metal to metal. They're very dangerous, but I just wanted to let you know. That's the reason I looked at your rear brakes. On the other hand, if they say that your brakes are 15% left over, then the question is what were you doing looking at my brakes when I want you? So what symptoms would you want them to address? And then when they call you with an estimate, you're going to say, rule number two, is this a fix or a guess? And if it turns out to be a guess, how are we going to unwind this deal? Because if it's a guess, please tell me it's a guess so I can make an intelligent decision. But if you're going to tell me it's a fix, then I expect my symptoms, are going to be fixed with your repair costing $350. I also want to know the final cost. I want to know the final cost. I don't want to get there, and you told me $400. And then I find out we got 10% in taxes, which is another $40, that you've got shop supplies and environmental charges that adds another $15 to it. So instead of $400, it's $465. I don't want that. Out the door price. Thank you very much.
2 minutes.
Then I want my old parts back. And here's why. It's not to test them to see if they really replace the part. Here's the deal. If you put some mass airflow sensor on that costs you $400 and it doesn't work, hand him your old one back and say, put this on, take your new one off, and give me my money back. After you're absolutely sure the problem has solved and the mass airflow sensor fixed it, then throw it away. But that's why you ask for your old parts back. Last but not least, you pay with a credit card. Because there's not any of us in the auto repair industry or in any business that's big enough, strong enough, and wealthy enough to tell MasterCharge and Visa to go down and see the devil. If MasterCharge and Visa calls us up and says Mrs. Jones is disputing the bill because she paid you $300 to fix her car and you didn't, I'm not going to tell MasterCharge and Visa to go pound sand. I'm not strong enough. I'm not big enough. That's a foolish move. That gives you an extra layer of protection, and it gives you 30 days to 45 days to figure out if the job was done right. Mark, has people disputed their credit cards on you? Yes. Have you ever lost one of the disputes? Yes. Why? Well, I thought I fixed the car, and she took it somewhere else, and they fixed the car, and the symptoms were gone. And so I didn't fight it. I just said, yes, give her the credit, and I'll deduct that from my deposit. But then there's been times where people have, all of us, they've disputed their credit card, and the credit card company listens to both sides, and they'll make a judgment call, and really there's no appeal. It's their way or the highway. So that's why you do it. What symptoms are you going to fix? Is it a fix or a guess? What's the final cost? Please put my old parts in the new boxes and put them on the floor for me, and then I'm going to pay with a credit card. That's the way to do it. Please don't drink and drive. God bless you. I'll see you next Saturday here at 10 o'clock. And happy Super Bowl Sunday to you.